Hello, dear listener. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Spooky Doings podcast. My name is Rick Guzman. I'm an improv comedian from New York, and I'm here with a dear friend, Miss Betty Williams from Final Girl, occasionally Spooky Doings, but most notably to talk about here today, the film Black Holler. Hello, Betty.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. You know what? Fuck it. I'll lie to people, but I'll never lie to the audience. We recorded this before, and one of us fucked it up. I'm not going to say who, but it's the person who has been on more posted episodes.
That's okay.
It's not okay. No, like, but that's all right, because you're generous enough for your time to come back and re-record. Because one of us, again, not going to say names, is a technological nincompoop.
That's fair. I'm honestly not super technologically inclined either.
So we're in the same boat.
Right.
And speaking of boats, we met in an improv class several years ago. And me being me, I just have to talk about horror and how much I loved it. And I think you just leave me like, yeah, I was in a horror movie in Tennessee. And everything in me went, oh, I must watch.
Right. And I think you had to wait a full another year between me telling you about it and it actually being released because it was still in post-production when I was telling people about it.
That'll happen. Show business is not the glamorous thing that everybody, that people that are not in it believe it to be. There's a lot of hard work. There's a lot of sweat. In your case, there's having muck from the bottom of a lake put on your shoulder.
Yeah. Black Holler is... It's honestly almost a miracle that it exists. because the friends of mine who wrote it and put it together and made it happen and produced it themselves, we had very little money. They did two Kickstarters. We had maybe $2,000. Given to us by a fringe festival to complete it. All of the actors worked for free. All of the crew worked for free. All of the people who edited the film, I believe there were several volunteers. Maybe somebody got paid. Maybe not. I don't know. But basically, all of the money went into the actual filming, the equipment, and that kind of stuff, but it's really, truly a labor of love from everyone involved.
And that's the beautiful thing about the genre. You get a bunch of people with an idea calling in favors to manifest it into some kind of physical form, and sometimes the passion makes up for the lack of budget, because I just watched it again yesterday. There's maybe someone on the crew stole a Rice Krispie treat from someplace. There's very little money in it, but you guys did a lot with the little you have, and it definitely seemed like everybody had fun being a part of it in the sheer ridiculousness of things. But that's one of the things I love about you as a performer, is when you get fucking ridiculous, when you're annoyed or when you're bored or when you're filthy. It's just, there's just something about you that's like, that's fucking funny.
Thank you. I feel like definitely my face is very easy to read. I'm very expressive, is what I've been told. I would make a terrible waitress and have never been a waitress.
Or liar, really.
No, I'm very honest to a fault. Somebody will ask me a question, and you know I'm about to say something you don't want to hear when I say, well, that's me stalling to put it in words that are nicer than what I'm really thinking.
Well, another thing about the ridiculousness of this film that I'm not going to spoil, because I think people should see it and check it out and support it, as you should most independent art, the character Brad.
Yeah.
Who is replaced multiple times throughout the movie by different actors, sometimes later in the film in the same fucking scene.
Yeah.
And he's always saying, Brad, don't change. And that just cracked me up.
No, I thought that was a really, really... It was... when we were filming it, we were unsure of how it was going to read in the final product. What happened is our original Brad, who we had already filmed several shots with, ended up quitting in the middle of the production, which is totally understandable because this dragged on for 2 summers into the fall, and he just had conflicts. You know, he had other stuff going on. We were not getting paid for this. So the creators decided to do this running bit where it was always being played by a different person. And the way you would recognize Brad is he always had the same costume, the same wig, the same hat, and they just threw it on a different actor. So every shoot, we had a different Brad there. And I was like, I hope this reads. But then when you see the final product, you're like, that's really funny, because that with that catchphrase, I'm Brad, baby, I don't change. But then... does.
Well, I, if I recall correctly, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I think he went to Tennessee for it to be in some kind of festival or get screened there. So, well, what was your thought watching it with an audience?
Oh, it was awesome. So I went back when the film was finally finished and edited and put together, and we had a big official red carpet screening at a very... popular independent theater called the Belcourt in Nashville. And so we all went to the Belcourt. It was sold out. Everybody's friends and family were there. Most of the cast came. So it was really, really nice.
Was Brad there?
Brad, many Brads.
Many
were there.
Brads. Was there.
And it was just so wonderful to see this thing that you had worked on for over a year, had no idea what it was going to look like, come together and be in a packed house with everybody reacting at the same time and people laughing and seeing what actually did make it into the film and like seeing what didn't make it into the film. And it was just a really great experience. We had a really good response. My mother got back in touch with me where, like, I guess a coworker had accidentally gone to see it. Like, they didn't know I was in it. That's not the reason why they went.
Right.
Which is nice. And got feedback from that person saying that they enjoyed it and that it was a lot of fun. And so that's always really nice to hear.
It certainly is.
Unbiased opinion.
Well, speaking of my biased opinion, clearly you were my favorite because we know each other and I'm watching your scenes very intently. And the scenes where you're in a lake, and of course there's something sinister in there. So tell us about that. Like, how difficult could that have been to film in probably not the cleanest water?
So my character Daphne. And she's big buddies with another character, Ben, and they're the two stoners. I'm using air quotes right now. I don't know why.
That's okay.
But
I appreciate you saying that for our listeners, that you're using air quotes.
So we were the stoner duo, and there is a group scene where everybody's hanging out and playing and swimming in the lake, and then just the two stoner duos get left behind together playing by themselves. So this was filmed multiple times in multiple locations. The group scenes were filmed at like a friend of a friend's piece of property out in the middle of nowhere, no cell phone reception kind of spot, and it was in a spring-fed creek. Spring-fed means super cold. So it was maybe 90 degrees that day, but the water is like freezing. So it's awful until your body goes numb, and then it's not awful anymore because you can't feel it. So we had filmed the group scene during the high noon. It was nice and hot and everything. And then we had to go back at dusk. Because they said, oh, there's this beautiful natural fog that comes up on, because you know from the difference in the temperature, and you can actually see it because the lights are going down. And all I could think going back out there, because we, you know, went and had a nice dinner break back at the house and then had to go back out.
So at least they fed you.
Yes, they were good about feeding us. They always had food on set. But we were going back down to that spring to shoot some of the single shots, and I was just dreading it, dreading it. But, it, the finished product looks great. One of the other locations we used is a popular hiking spot up around Monteagle Mountain. I actually have some family who live up there, and they're mad when I didn't visit them. But I was like, it's business. But Monteagle Mountain...
I'm working for no money.
Right? Monteagle Mountain is like the halfway point you have. If you're going from Nashville to Atlanta, you have to cross over Monteagle Mountain. And there's this place called Foster Falls. And it's this huge waterfall with a big pool at the bottom. And so that's where we went to shoot the underwater shots. And it was also very cold because we never could hit it schedule-wise. Like, I was either there like in late spring or early fall. We weren't there in high summer. Mm-hmm. And, you'd be out there for maybe 2 hours for what ended up being, 5 minutes worth of footage.
Give or take a little bit.
It was like constantly diving over and over again. I think they ended up kind of giving me like the Trooper Award in the cast for having to do multiple water shoots in the cold.
From what I've heard, most horror movies will have one, somebody that went above and beyond the Call of Duty. So if you got that one, wow.
And unfortunately, a couple of the original water shoots got scrapped. So we had started filming one summer, and then all of that footage was just worthless. We ended up going with a different direction costume-wise, and like there were some casting changes. So all that got scrapped. And some of those original shots, the original group swim scene was shot in what I call a glorified cow pond. For you city folks,
please.
A cow pond's exactly what it sounds like. It's a big man-made hole in the ground where the cows go cool off. Fortunately, there were no cows on this piece of property.
That helps.
But that's definitely what it looked like. It was very, very murky. It was muddy. You would get in and you immediately sink like almost to the knees in mud. It was pretty gross. So I'm happy that that footage ended up not being useful because it didn't look good. But that was a rough day.
That'll happen on set. You will have rough days of like, oh, this better be worth it. What am I doing? Why am I here? My ass hurts.
It's hot. Many sunburns were gotten during the filming of this movie.
I noticed there was that one character, Laquita's cousin, that in some shots I'm like, I don't want to generalize people from the South. They're wonderful people. My excursions as a New York man to places like Tennessee and Louisiana, I have loved so much. But this man's neck was literally red and his back was pale white. And I'm like, that's a thing. That's a real thing. I just like, can we get him some aloe? That doesn't look like it feels good.
It happens. It can happen just, you got to park too far away from the Walmart. You get your t-shirt on and you walk from your car to Walmart and all of a sudden you got sunburn. It happens.
It does happen.
Wear sunscreen, kids.
It's very important. Very important to protect yourself from the sun's rays as it's cooking all of us, because climate change is a real thing. But for being in a horror movie, which again, I love the genre, in our discussions, you revealed you don't watch a lot of horror.
I do not. Honestly, I don't watch a lot of movies, I guess. I mean, I do. I don't want to get anybody wrong. I like Netflix and chill as much as anybody else. But
I heard from the young people that's code.
Yeah. Oh, no. Netflix and chilling.
Oh, well, here I was thinking your husband was a very happy man for, and I'm sure certain he is. I've met him. He's a delightful gentleman. But I'm the youth lingo. Sometimes, we called it something different in mine.
No, I'm an old lady at heart. I don't know any cool slang. My coworkers have to catch me up.
Oh, okay. Cool. That's why I have a youth correspondent here sometimes.
Yes. Now, as far as watching a lot of horror movies, I've seen a lot of the classics. I've seen The Exorcist, and I've seen The Omen, and then I've seen all the the big 90s, 2000s that came out, The Grudge, and what's the one with the girl coming out of the TV?
The Ring.
See, I don't even remember.
That's okay.
But I can say I've read a lot. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, I went through a phase where I was obsessed with R.L. Stein. I had R.L. Stein Goosebumps. I had R.L. Stein Fear Street. I read the Urban Legends books and the Real Scary Stories books. And then when I was in high school, thanks to my mother, I started going through her book collection, and I read a lot of Anne Rice novels and Stephen King novels. And if you're not following Anne Rice, Vampire Rules, I think you're bullshit.
you're better than I thought. You are a horror fan because you got strong opinions about things.
Mm-hmm. About my monsters. Yes. And then I like thrillers. Mm-hmm. I have a little trouble with the movies that involve any kind of devil possession. I usually end up having nightmares.
I'm hearing that from some people.
I don't know why I'm such a wuss. And then I don't really like super violent slasher stuff like Rob Zombie. I think I made it through the first 20 minutes of House of a Thousand Corpses, and I just could not. It was too disturbing. I guess the difference between having that actual visual of someone acting out real life and then my brain, picturing something when I'm reading something, makes it bearable.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe, but you've also been on a set, so you know that whatever you see within the picture frame, there's about maybe six or seven unshaven ne'er-do-wells like myself doing the stuff keep the hose out of the shot and just blow the blood onto this person's face. It's gonna be great. It's gonna look great. But it was your love of monsters that makes this a special two-for-one episode, in that it's also a tutorial. And I asked you to watch Adam Green's Digging Up the Marrow.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Go ahead.
I liked it. At the very beginning, so it's a mockumentary, mm-hmm. Which I think is a really smart choice, because it was another low-budget film, so they were doing a really good job, and they really do a good job building the suspense throughout the film. And at first, they were doing such a good job of the mockumentary, I really thought I was watching a documentary on horror movies. I was like, does Rick think I'm such a wuss that I can't handle a real horror movie? But then as soon as we get to the character Decker, where you have a character Decker who contacts Adam saying, monsters exist, I have proof, and they sit down to interview with him, that's when I was like, oh, okay, this is a real movie.
Yeah, played by the wonderful Ray Wise of Twin Peaks fame and Reaper. And you had mentioned previously that you weren't familiar with him, but he's one of those character actors that he's been in fucking everything.
Right.
If you're a fan at all, he pops up everywhere, even in non-genre stuff. He was in RoboCop back in the day, but he was also Robin's dad on How I Met Your Mother.
Oh, see, I didn't put any of that together. So when I'm watching it, when he pops up, I don't know if I thought I recognized him. Probably not, because I didn't watch Twin Peaks. But the difference between Adam and,
Decker.
Yes, the real actor is, it's... I think that's what really tipped it off. Because Adam, you know, he does a good job, but he's not on that level. But the acting's so good. Like, I can't imagine having picked anybody else.
He is a wonderful actor in pretty much everything. And hopefully going forward, if you see him in some stuff, you go, oh, that fucking guy.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
But what did you think about some of the creatures that are represented in artwork by an artist named Alex Pardee on drawings throughout the film, and then later on some of them are brought to life?
Yeah, so when they're interviewing Decker multiple times, he'll show them different sketches that he's had made for him depicting the different monsters that he's seen over the years, and they're beautiful because what Decker has seen and what the artist has drawn is, they're like, I guess you would want to call it like their peaceful or dormant mode.
Everybody's got one.
Right, and so, and they're beautiful and they're colorful and they're almost like kind of sweet the way they've been depicted in these sketches, because they're making them, and Decker describes them as being shy. Just like, I guess, a mountain lion looks sweet and shy when it's off by itself and not trying to eat your face.
Yeah, when it's just chilling.
Right?
When it's doing its happy kitty thing.
Right.
When no one's looking. But even house cats, like if you're looking out in your yard or on the street and you see like a cat rolling around in a sunbeam, once it knows that it's being watched, it's like, oh, fuck you, I'm leaving.
You're right.
But if it thinks it's not being watched, they're like, I'm a happy kitty.
So what is cool when you do finally get to see these monsters is you recognize some of them from the sketches. You're like, oh yeah, we saw him. And the way they have them go from that dormant, beautiful sketch to in action monster, it's really creative and really cool the way it makes that switch, and they're terrifying. The first time around when I watched it, and all of a sudden you would get like little peeks, like little pops, right, little jump scares, but then there's like an actual attack scene where they're being chased by these creatures and you see them like in beast mode, and it's terrifying.
Did you watch it with the lights on or off?
I would say, like, it was dim. I didn't have all the lights off. I don't do that. I'm not brave. I'm not brave like that. I'm always like, I'm going to keep one light on. Because I was by myself, and I wasn't sure exactly what I was getting into. I'm sure I would have been fine with the lights off, but, no, I definitely had, like, a light on.
Did you enjoy any, well, did you feel any tension watching the film, and did you enjoy any of that tension?
Very much so. I think they did an excellent job building the tension between, you know, the introduction and the very slow reveals where you'd get a little bit of a monster and then you get a little more and a little more, and then there's a scene when they're talking about digging up the marrow, there's like an actual opening into the marrow of the earth where the monsters are said to stay and live and travel. Where Adam and his partner Will have gone out by themselves without Decker, because they're sick of his old man meddling, telling them not to use lights. And so they go out to the marrow by themselves.
We're filmmakers, we need light.
I know. And so they like stick their heads down into the marrow, and you're like, oh no, is this it? Is this where they're going to get eaten? And it's a really good build, so it's... I definitely felt it. It's like every time they'd stick their head or a body part down into that hole, I was like, ooh!
And then something reach up and steals Adam Green's boot.
Yes, that does happen, and it was nice to get that, because you'd have that tension build of like, is something going to happen? And then it wouldn't happen. You're like, oh, okay, they're good. And then out of nowhere, he got his boot snatched. And it was nice to have, like, a little... Because it's a subtle film, I think.
Very much so.
You know, like, it's subtle, and they do have a few, like, little jump scares, and it builds and it builds, and then you have that big attack moment. But I don't, you know, it's just... It's well done. It's a solid film.
So you enjoyed it?
I did.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Thank you.
But with that in mind, would you now be interested in pursuing more horror in your actually watching Netflix and chilling habit, not the code, as the kids
right,
say.
Right, right, right. Yeah, I'd be up for it. And I don't want to say I watched a horror movie just the other night. I don't think it's technically
a horror movie.
Yeah, it's
The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. No.
Secret Obsession.
I've not heard of that.
I don't know if it really...
Is that the one on Netflix about, like, this guy kind of, like... tell me what it's about.
Okay.
Because I've not seen it.
A woman who's been in a car accident, and she has lost her memory, and she gets picked up at the hospital by someone posing as her husband.
Oh, okay. I haven't watched it, but if he's not her husband, yes, it's a horror movie.
Okay, gotcha. So, like, it's hard to say, like, what falls under the horror genre. Like, is this just a thriller? Is it, like, a murder mystery? It's not really a murder mystery. I don't even know what to call it. To be fair, I don't recommend it. Sorry. Sorry, Netflix. Sorry, Secret Obsessions.
You ain't gotta apologize.
But I feel like just the little preview that you get shown before you watch it already ruins it.
Oh,
because you go into it knowing... That's not her husband.
That's a problem. I think...
Because of the preview. Yeah, what are you going to do with?
Sometimes the preview reveals too much.
Yeah.
Did you see the Pet Sematary remake?
Oh, I did not.
Okay. Not to spoil it for you, but having watched the original and having read the book, the second preview for Pet Sematary revealed that they... took a drastic change from the source material.
Right.
And I understand why they did it. And I kind of enjoyed what they did with it, because now if you're familiar with the source material, you're like, oh, you're still getting the greatest hits, mm-hmm. but they're freestyling to a point. I just wish I had gone into the movie not knowing that, because then I'm just waiting, like, where's the change? When are we getting to the change?
Right.
And if... The change would have had more oomph had the preview not revealed it.
I get that.
But getting back on the topic of thrillers, I think certain horror movies are called thrillers because then you'll get people to watch them that don't watch horror movies.
Right, so in like me.
Yeah, so in the case of like Seven or Silence of the Lambs.
Okay.
Seven is a serial killer movie. Silence of the Lambs is a serial killer and cannibal movie. And
I've seen both.
Yeah. But I'm gonna guess if they called it Hannibal the Cannibal, you wouldn't want to watch that motherfucker.
Maybe not.
Maybe not. But you know, you have wonderful Jodie Foster in there and Anthony Hopkins being all wonderful and badass, but it's a horror movie. Just put some A-list, not that I don't think either of them were really A-list at that time, but it made them A-list if they weren't already.
For sure.
But since you mentioned you grew up reading a lot of horror, I didn't read Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, but are you aware of that film coming out soon?
Yes. Is it
Guillermo del Toro produced it.
Okay.
The director's name escapes me, but it's by a guy that directed a really great movie called Troll Hunter, which is exactly what it sounds like, and it's on Shudder, and I believe Netflix if you want to check it out. It's a found footage movie about some people up in the Nordic areas of Europe actually hunting trolls. So if you like creatures, that's a movie that I would recommend for you.
Okay. No, I'm excited. I saw a preview for Scary Stories, and I said, okay, because I remember reading the, mm-hmm. I don't know if it was like one book or a series, but I definitely read one of them. If there's only one, then I read it. If there's multiple, then I read one. But I remember, and I'm excited for it. I'm happy that Del Toro's name is on it, mm-hmm. so that makes me feel good about maybe spending money on it. So.
He does deliver a lot of heart, and from what I've read in Fangoria ahead of time, His emphasis was making the illustrations from the book come to life on film.
That's cool.
So again, not being familiar with those books, but looking at the creatures in the preview, I'm like, oh, this is something.
The illustrations, like, I'm going by memory here, and it's a long time ago, but they're real creepy and not realistic.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested to see how that's going to turn out.
Because the previews made them look realistic.
Well, right.
And I think this is, at least for me, this is the first time that I can remember in a long time being excited about seeing a PG-13 horror movie. Because most of the time, I want the blood, nudity, and profanity.
Okay,
not most of the time. All of the time, I want the blood, nudity, and profanity.
Fair enough.
I'm conditioned that way. I came up in the 80s when you got lots of blood, nudity, and profanity.
Which, speaking of the 80s, I don't know if we mentioned that Black Holler is set in the 80s. It is
We did not, but yes, it is set in 1989.
An homage to the old school, like, slasher flicks. So it's a lot of fun. You can go to blackholler.com and check it out. It's a horror comedy set in the 80s. So we hit all the tropes, all of the stereotypes.
It does have
some
similarities to Evil Dead in a way, but I feel the tongue is planted even deeper into the cheek, a lot firmer. It's like, yep, we're just having a good time here.
Oh, it's full on cheeseball. It's full on cheeseball. There is no...
Like when you go to the supermarket and you have like the big basket of cheese balls.
Yeah.
That's a great description.
It's definitely supposed to be fun, but it's still very much so a horror movie. People are dying.
I could see...
And it's creepy.
I could see it getting a cult status, like something like The Room by Tommy Wiseau, where there are people that are like, we just need to get together with a theater full of like-minded people to have fun with this. If only because I want to hear about you traveling to different places in America. Like, they're screening Black Holler and I'm going to be there for some ridiculous Q&A and I want you to see people dressed up as you.
And I mean, they have submitted it to several festivals. It is still ongoing, current. Heidi, one of the main writers, she also played the character of, oh no, it's been so long, the one who loves cats, and, oh no, I forgot her character's name, this is terrible.
That's okay.
It doesn't matter, but anyway.
We still got love for Heidi.
She's still going out and doing festivals, and we get to win fun awards. They just won Best Screenplay at one festival, that was really cool, and we were excited for. I don't remember where I was going with that, other than it's still very active.
It's still alive. It's still finding its audience.
That it could definitely be like a really fun, like, midnight showing somewhere. You could definitely get things that are dumb, like every time Brad changes, you do a shot, and then you'd be super drunk.
You'd be fucked up by the time this movie was over.
So maybe not a shot, but like, you know, you can do something every time there's a different Brad, and every time somebody's eating cheese, you could do something. Like, that's a weird thing that goes throughout the film. They decided to make us, like, obsessed with cheese. I guess that's supposed to be a white person thing.
I know many people, and I hate to generalize, but most of the ladies in my life are obsessed with fucking cheese.
I don't know. I mean, I like cheese. Don't get me wrong, but I'm not like... I don't know. I don't usually go out of my way.
You're not ravenous for cheese.
Like, oh man, I really need to go get some extra sharp white cheddar. That's usually a thing. I mean, I do keep feta in the house, though. That's a kind of a staple.
As you should. You're there. You got one light on. You're watching a horror movie. You're going to watch Troll Hunter, maybe, if you're cool with subtitles, because...
I can handle subtitles.
Of course you can. You're an intelligent woman. I've known some people that are like, man, I don't like movies with subtitles. They go by too fast. I'm like, no, you need to read faster, motherfucker.
Yes, read faster. Practice.
I'm at the point now where there are certain programs in English, but I'm like, I don't really understand this accent, but I don't want to miss anything. We're just rewatching Deadwood because the language, the dialogue's almost Shakespearean. I'm like, I want to know exactly what's going on, other than just picking up on how many times they say cocksucker. So as a result of rewatching Deadwood, I've been saying cocksucker a lot more.
Oh,
mostly.
No.
Directed at the technology in my life that's going awry.
That's
like not just not just the passersby. I'm not a savage. But when I can't get all of my music to sync on my phone, guess who I call a cocksucker?
That's fair.
Okay.
That's fair.
Because my appliances don't have feelings yet.
No, I hope they don't. I've seen Terminator. I'm very anti-AI.
Me too. One day they will rise up and slay us all.
I know. Like, haven't you seen Terminator? Didn't you see, I'm going to sound not smart now. What's that other one? The big one. Keanu Reeves.
The Matrix?
Yes, The Matrix. Haven't you people seen all these movies? Stop making AI. Stop it. Don't make clones either. I've seen all those movies too.
Had issues with clones.
No clones.
But that's from reading Spider-Man comics like of the 90s. And as a special treat for all of our listeners, we just had someone enter the room. I got a chair for you here, darling.
Oh, you ruined it. I was going to hello, everyone.
Our youth correspondent, Chelsea Bennington.
I am not late at all. This is all intentional. Me coming in at whatever moment you guys are at right now.
You're a youth correspondent. We could have used you a couple of minutes ago when we were discussing Netflix and chill and how that's a code for some young people. But
have you not heard Netflix and chill?
I had. But it's... For an old man like me, it's when you actually chill out and watch something on the Netflix.
Well, for a single woman like me, it's also chilling on the couch and going to sleep after watching five episodes of Frasier.
I also meant it literally earlier when I said it.
Right. So, see, there we go. That's the coolest person here right now.
Clearly, star of Black Holler. But yeah, we were talking about the movies, and we were talking about scary stories to tell in the dark, and this tutorial episode has gone well, so Betty might be checking out some more horror in the not-too-distant future.
What was you probably already answered this, but what did you like about it? Like, what type of horror would you want to see? Because you watched Taking Up the Marrow, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I generally do better with, like, thrillers and monsters.
Nice.
Not crazy about slashers.
That's fair.
I guess that's all of the horror, isn't it? Slashers, thrillers, and monsters.
You pretty much hit the trifecta. You can definitely boil it down really to those three things.
But there are subgenres, like you said, you didn't like possession movies. But maybe I'll see if I can find one that you'll enjoy.
Well, it's hard because like I do like those movies, but I don't like nightmares.
I don't like the trauma that they cause.
Well, I recently saw something online posted by Mark Patton from Nightmare on Elm Street 2. And it's a meme of Lisa Simpson in front of a board, and on the board it's written, "Nightmares are just horror movies produced, directed, and starred by you." And I'm like, yes. Yeah, I'm like, so maybe I need to have more.
That I make some stupid ass movies. Like, there's nothing quality going on in my brain with nightmares.
My lady says dreams are the toilet of the mind, so don't take them too seriously.
Dreams are the toilet of the mind.
I have a reoccurring dream that I'm Spider-Man, so hey.
I should start keeping a dream journal, because I have a hard time remembering them. Yeah. I'm just like, I'll wake up and like it's there. I gotta put a notebook by the bed. And I've been saying this for years, but
you're gonna do it today.
I'm gonna
pick up
today.
A notebook.
Now it's on.
Yeah,
it's been recorded.
It's been
I
recorded.
Have to do it now.
Yeah.
and when we post this, I'll put that in the description. That Betty's got to keep.
Betty better be keeping up with her dreams.
Got to keep a dream journal going forward because that's important.
Mm-hmm.
So. Once again, where can everybody find you? Betty when they're looking for you out in the world?
Oh, man. I'm Betty E. Williams on Instagram if you feel like getting on there. Again, check out Black Holler. Go to blackholler.com. You can see trailers and read about all the cool festivals we've gone to and the awards we've won. So, you know.
I know the digital movie is available for purchase. I got the DVD. I don't know if they got any of those
DVDs are still available. I don't think we're on a stream service at the moment. We were, but you missed it. So,
so
we're going to try to get it back up, though.
Get a hard copy. And I know from previous guests, there are certain horror movies that fans are clamoring for VHS releases.
Wow.
So since the movie takes place in 1989, I feel it should be on VHS.
That would be awesome.
Video Vortex, are you listening?
Mm-hmm. Be kind, rewind. Chelsea, where can people find you when you show up at the time that's perfect?
Oh,
sporting a new tattoo.
Yes, I'm hardcore now. You can find me on Instagram at ChelseaLB. It's ChelseaLB. My name isn't spelled with two E's. Just
got
some
it.
Loser took the username. Like, really? Anyway, that is where you can find me on Instagram, Chelsea Bennington on Twitter.
All right, cool. And you can follow Spooky Doings on Instagram, Spooky Doings Improv on Facebook for information about this podcast and our shows throughout New York. It hasn't been announced yet, but I'm going to say it. We're going to be playing at the Magnet Theater on Halloween.
Cool.
I don't have information about what time yet.
But you know the day.
You know the day. You can clear your fucking calendar in advance.
Trick or treat, y'all.
And check us out. So, yeah, go to magnettheater.com periodically, and you'll find information about that show coming up. So, thank you for being here with us, Betty.
Thank you, Rick.
Love you.
Thank you, Chelsea.
Yes.
All right. Till next time. Bye-bye.